traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here for Flying Turns, part of our great International Equine Network. And with me, of course, the founder of the IEN, our own Scott Miller. Hey, Scott, how's it going?
Good afternoon, Steve. I hear you had some excitement yesterday.
I don't know how much of excitement, but yeah, the main track that I work with doing their publicity and marketing, the Hippodrome 3R up in Trois-Rivières, Three Rivers, Quebec, they were finally able to open for their harness racing season with, of course, spectatorless racing. But they had a great opening day card. Their feature race, a preferred pace, was won by Sports Authority in 1:54.4. And considering there hasn't been any racing on that track since last November, the track crew deserves kudos for having their half-mile oval in tip-top shape. And we're glad that our friends in Quebec are back racing. And now I think the last holdout is probably Plain Ridge Racecourse in Massachusetts. And they were supposed to open July 6th, and they just got notification yesterday that they are not going to be opening till July 12th, which is a bit of a setback because I know they were gearing up to get going. But it's I don't want to say a dog-eat-dog world out there, but there's racing back now, and everyone's fighting and chewing at the gnawing at the bit to get all that simulcasting revenue come in.
Yeah. Well, how were the fields yesterday, Steve? Were they getting full fields?
Yeah, they had a couple races that had seven horse fields, and they only had eight races. So I would say at least six of them were nine horse fields. I mean, I don't think there's that much of a shortage of horses up there. They are only racing eight races a day to start off with until the rotation gets going, and they'll be back Hippodrome 3R with a full card they're drawing today for Sunday afternoon at 1 o'clock. So we're glad to see racing. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
You can watch that on Twin Spires and HPI.
HPI, yes. HPI carries all the tracks in Canada. So, I mean, it's easy accessible if you want to watch and wager. And the track also provides free programs. If you go to their website, hippodrome3r.ca, and they really provide, they put on a good show for a small track, you know, located up in Quebec. It's not an easy drive for anybody. It's the same distance between Three Rivers and New York as it is for Toronto. So anyone racing out there, but it's a good track. Track announcer Guy LaFontaine tries to inject some English into all his race calls, so it's easy to follow. But no, they have good HD cameras and stuff, and they're racing primarily in the daytime. Friday afternoons at 4 p.m., Sundays at 1. So provided the sun comes out, they got a superb picture, you know, to send out to the race fans. So, of course,
how long
I don't. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
How long does that meet last, Steve?
Well, they're going to race 2 days a week through the end of October, and then a couple Sundays after that. So, the beginning of November, because the weather really can start to get poor up there at that time. But they're going to race, you know, throughout the summer all the way to November, and they have close to over $1 million in stake races for their, Quebec bred series. So, I mean, they're in sort of their own little world out there, but they're able to handle it. They definitely, you know, with that schedule, can fill the race cards. And their breeding operations in Quebec are getting stronger and stronger every year. They're allowing, as long as the mayor has been in this province of Quebec for 160 days, then the resulting foals are eligible to their Quebec Bred Series.
Well, that's good. Now, are they getting some good drivers up there for those Saturday or for those Friday and Saturday meets?
Oh no, for the Friday and Sunday meets, absolutely. Yeah. Let's see. The leading driver is Stefan Gendron. He's been he's going for his fourth straight title, driving title there. Francis Richard, Serge Nadeau, a host of good trainers. Driver-wise, Richard Simard, who a lot of people know, nicknamed the Black Cat, he races up there. And for the special stake races, usually the driving sensation, Louis-Philippe Roy, comes back home. That's where he grew up, in Quebec. He comes back to drive in the stake races at Three Rivers. So they have some pretty good competition there. They have some good a good young driver that won the feature with Sports Authority is Tyler Jones, and he's the son of Mr. Jones. I can't remember his first name, but who was a prominent driver trainer up there. And they have a lot right. of young people that are starting to come up and drive. I have to think of the names. I know there's the Phil Young kid, no relation to Hervé in that family. Samuel Phil Young. He's doing very well and got his professional license. And they even hopefully during the summer that the young man from Bermuda, Kiwan Waldron, is hopefully going to come back and drive this season again. He was great. In fact, he had four winners on the Sire Stake Finals Day at Three Rivers, and he has the ability, I think, if he can get back here in the United States after the pandemic, to be a really good young driver. I mean, he's got the abilities that I see so far that, you know, he has the possibilities of becoming a Louis-Philippe Roy or a Dexter Dunn in the future, provided, you know, he can get back to the United States or to North America to keep driving.
I was just thinking this morning, flipped on the news real quick, and they said that Governor Cuomo had put a quarantine on anyone coming out of Florida into New York, and I guess that Connecticut and New Jersey are the same, you know.
Yes.
So, it's kind of good that, you know, all of our people got out of, you know, Florida just in time.
When they did, and you know how Casey Coleman sent her grooms home early because of the 14-day quarantine, right. So that, you know, she would have some of her grooms already when she shipped all the horses north. And she herself, Casey, had to stay in the house, staying on the where they were working with the farm for 14 days quarantine before she could go to the racetrack. And
right. Now,
the same
thing.
Are
they doing that at Three Rivers? Are they doing that at Three Rivers?
No. Anyone can come from a different province, and that's because their rate of coronavirus, even though they don't do as much testing as the United States, but their rate is way, way down. So it's not a problem. And primarily the majority of horsemen and horse people racing at Three Rivers come from Quebec themselves, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, down in Ottawa from Rideau Carlton, but not that many come at this time of the year from Toronto or Ontario. They'll come, a little later in the season as the stake races start up again.
Right.
Have news. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I have some other news, too, before we get our first guest on here in a couple minutes. But we have Bold Eagle, the trotting sensation from Europe. He was supposed to come here and race this season, and he will not be coming. In fact, what will happen is I think he has two more starts, and then on August 2nd, he's going to race in a big stake in Finland, and that'll be his last race, and he'll go into retirement and just stud duty. But he's on the verge of becoming, or he already is, the second winningest, richest horse in the history of Europe, 4.9 million euros on his card. So hopefully he's going to get a couple more wins before he retires. He'll break the $5 million euro mark, which the only horse to beat him, be ahead of him, is his father, and his name is Reddy Cash.
Well, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, like we said before in previous shows, you know, the owners are really trying to play, you know, what's going to value, make, add value to their horse. You know, so you got to do what you got to do.
No.
You say we're going to have a
absolutely
guest, a standard bred guest.
There we go. Yes, any moment now we're going to have a dear friend of mine for probably 30 years in the business. His name is Les Kahn, and he's one of the owners of Grand Swan, the top four-year-old trotting mare, and she's racing against the boys at the Meadowlands Saturday night in the $50,000 second leg of the Graduate Trotting Series. And 10 days ago, Grand Swan, again, and she's a mare and a Sire Stakes champion from Indiana, where she totally excelled and won numerous stake races out there. Her first start of the year was actually against the boys in the Graduate Series, and she beat them. She wired the field in 153 flat, which was a good mile. But as we talk with Les, the competition's a little stiffer for Grand Swan this weekend. But we want to get Les up here, talk a little bit about his experience, his life in harness racing, and his perspectives of Grand Swan, because it did not fare well in the draw, and Grand Swan is going against Chimpanzee, who is probably one of the top older trotters now in the United States. He's 4 years old. And in his first start, which was also in the Graduate, a different leg last week at Tioga, he wired the field in 151-4. He set a track record for his age and gait, and for driver Brian Sears. And it'll make an interesting conversation because, of course, Brian Sears wants to drive Chimpanzee, but Brian Sears is also the driver of Grand Swan. So, you know, we'll be able to talk with Les. Hopefully he's going to get on the line here shortly.
Yeah. You know, I was just thinking that, you know, when you get an owner like that, you know, you find out how many horses they have and everything, that's got to be kind of a tough situation to be in, you know, trying to decide the future of the horse, whether to run against, you know, the Colts or the Geldings or stay, you know, in your division. You know, and where to go. And, you know, certainly we are limited on where we can go with the horses now because of the virus. You know, so you certainly want to pick a state that's going to have the good program, you know, such as Indiana, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, that type of thing. And, you know, I just don't see how the owners, you know, can make up their mind. Wonder how many flip a coin to see where they go.
Well, you know, Marcus Melander is the trainer of Chimpanzee, Grand Swan. I believe he has another horse. So for the graduate, you know, they end up having two horses in one division, and then one of his in another. And this week, whether they're seated or not, you know, Grand Swan got in against Chimpanzee. But I understand we have owner Les Kahn on the phone. Welcome, Les.
Thank you.
Welcome, Les.
Thank you. Glad to be on.
I know you're excited racing against the probably the best four-year-old or one of the best older trotters that is going to be on the scene this year. But it is what it has to be, and hopefully Grand Swan will be feeling good.
Well, let's put it this way. We would have preferred to be in the other division as we were at Tioga a couple of weeks ago. We knew ultimately it was inevitable, and we knew we'd be facing Chimpanzee, assuming we make the final, which I think we're pretty much assured to based on the point standings. And the only silver lining to being in against Chimpanzee is giving another driver a chance to sit behind her, which in this case is Tim Tietrich, because we knew we'd be up against Chimpanzee, assuming health-wise everybody's okay, in the final. And there'll be other conflicts as the year goes on. I believe Brian will always have first call. But this will, again, give Tim some experience. I'm sure she's got some quirks, as every horse does, and we're just hoping it works out for the best.
Well, that's the best news we can hear. But let's go back a little bit on your history, Les. How'd you get involved in the harness racing?
Well, I've been involved financially since the early 80s. I've been attending the races as early as they would. I could sneak into the New York tracks when they adhered to an 18 or over, I believe that's what it was, ruling, whether I was able to venture out to the thoroughbred tracks in the afternoons or Roosevelt or Yonkers at night. I had the luxury of a bus that left from right in front of my house, my apartment building on the Lower East Side of Manhattan, Vert, that would take you and drop you back off in the same place that took you out to all the racetracks. So that was my entree at age 16 or what, 15, 16 or what have you, to get out of the city, get away from the vertical environment, try and get out to the open spaces. And I was smitten by the bug very early. I guess you would call it, I was a typical high school track rat. Instead of hanging out with the guys, I was hanging out with the guys at the racetrack and enjoying
now,
it.
Wait a second. You have an older brother that's involved.
My older brother actually probably...
Roger is his name.
Yeah, my older brother, Roger, who's five plus years older and has been my partner on almost all the horses I've had, maybe short of one or two. I guess he helped in that process, but it was still my impetus in going out there. But he was very involved, and we continue to be involved right up to the moment, including with one of his earliest partners, Elliot Godowski. And we currently race under the Never Too Late stable, and for years prior to that, raced under the Ali Khan stable banner, which was a combination of my daughter and wife's names. But yeah, I mean, I've been going to, it's short of, I guess it runs a third to family, health, and then racing. And I've attended the races pretty much all over the world, certainly all over North America, and in France and Italy when I've traveled. And my bucket list is going down under one of these days. I think, Steve, you're going to help me with that trip when we get around to it. I did a little calculation. We probably owned, my brother was involved for about 4 or 5 years prior to my involvement. I think I've probably owned pieces of 70 some odd horses over the years, mostly mid to high level claimers. My brother's probably got another 20 to 25 on top of me. We've probably won races, our horses have won races at probably 25 tracks across North America. We probably raced at another dozen tracks beyond that. Our home tracks have always been in the New York metropolitan area or the Delaware Valley, in the heydays of Liberty Bell and Brandywine, and the latter, which everybody was distraught about losing. It's too bad it couldn't have hung on for about another year or 2 years, because it would have bridged the gap, ultimately got gaming, and would have been one of the most popular sites, racino sites in the country. But that's a story for another day.
Exactly.
Yep. And we've had some nice ones. We've had ones that these are all mostly overnight horses. We've gone up to the preferred and open ranks at some of the major tracks, but have never stayed there. We've just touched them. And we've had sire stakes winners in New Jersey and Delaware and Pennsylvania, but we're only talking about a leg here and there. We're not talking about anything major or any major finals or going on to any Grand Circuit races and so on. I had a couple that were well meant, but there was always something that, you know, a slight injury or what have you that got in the way. And our primary trainers over the years, just take you through four or five of them that kind of led us to where we are today, were Bobby Heil, who's living down in Florida, and who I believe owns a piece of the high-class trotter, Milady's Monet. Kevin McDermott, who we've been on and off trainer with and who's a dear family friend for both my brother and myself, and certainly a great sounding board. And we to this day, will speak to Kevin, even if it's just to see how one of those families are doing.
Who introduced you to someone like Kevin McDermott to get involved?
You did, Steve.
Oh,
you did, Steve,
that's
in
right.
your role at Freehold. I should mention that my kids grew up in two offices at two publicity offices at two different tracks, one at Freehold and one at Pompano Park. And you were the master of ceremonies at both of those places, Steve. I've got to give kudos to that.
Go ahead.
I'd be remiss if I didn't mention Mark Schwartz, who was
right.
We brought the horses to when we moved our stabling to the Delaware Valley in those in the waning days of Liberty Bell and Brandywine. And Mark is still a dear friend. Chris Ryder, who I believe is of all the trainers I've used, is probably the best overall horseman and certainly had the best eye for young horses. And it currently led us to Luane Miller, and who is our—I guess you could call him our primary trainer right now out in Indiana—and obviously then to Grand Swan, and who's a horse of a different color, so to speak, and something that we've never had, something the likes of that we've never had before, and probably will never have again, based on not spending a lot of money for yearlings and such. It's very, very hard to come by a horse like her. So
no, and I remember when. You made the decision to go in and buy approximately 25 or so percent. But at the time, how much did it cost you to buy in?
We spent 50, my partners and I, my brother and Elliot, spent $50,000 to buy 25% of her. She had two lifetime starts, one of which was at a fair where she made one of her rare breaks, but still finished second, and then had won an overnight, for young. And we saw a lot of talent there. We were led to her, believe it or not, by Renee Allard, and who we thank goodness at this point have parted company with. But Renee did, in fact, lead us to that thought process, and I was just in the right place at the right time when asked. He was looking for someone else, and because he was taking 25%, or he and his partners at the time, and it was just a stroke of fate. You could think of all the other steps I've taken over the years leading me to that one meeting and a phone call to my partner saying, we have to do this.
Now, and since you purchased Grand Swan, how much has she made?
She's made over $600,000. She made about $200,000 as a two-year-old in the Indiana Sires program, which is a wonderful program and is a program that I've continued to reinvest in. She left a little money on the table because she got sick and at the end of her season and missed the last leg and raced. She shouldn't have been raced. And there's an excellent article in the May issue of Indiana Standardbred Magazine where Luane Miller talked about her 2 and 3 year old season, and he described it perfectly. We never should have raced her, but she drew the rail. She was sick. She didn't give a great account of herself, so she left a little money on the table as a 2 year old. She probably would have been, if she was healthy, would have been 3 to 5 in that race. As a 3 year old, she won. I don't have the number of races that she won, but she made about a little over 400,000, including three minor Grand Circuit Stakes out in Indiana. Prior to going to Marcus Melander as a 4-year-old, she had only raced one time outside of Hoosier Park, as a matter of fact, and that was the race in the Matron at Dover, where she didn't get a great trip. She still got a check, gave a great account of herself, got a little bit more notice from a national standpoint. And then we were faced with the decision as to what to do and how to change the ownership around. And we somehow or another wound up with the help of Bruce Soulsby out in Ohio, who is one of the partners on the horse, and who owns many, many horses in the Midwest and some here in the East Coast. And we wound up going to Marcus Molander. It was a wonderful decision. And Marcus is so far is very, very easy to get along with, a terrific horseman, is only training trotters at this point, mostly younger ones. And along with Marcus came Brian Sears. And that's right. Been the combination so far. And we're one full. She had threw out a wonderful qualifier at the Meadowlands, which was her second qualifying start, which told us what we had thought she might be and kind of stamped her on as a player in the national scene. And
well, she is now for sure. And because she showed it in her last start when she won a division of the graduate. Now, what do you expect to see this Saturday night at the Meadowlands from her?
Well, we've got a new driver, certainly not taking anything away from Brian. I'm sure Timmy will do a great job with her. She's the 4-1 second choice. Obviously, she can't go with Jim Pansy. I don't think anyone in that field can go with Jim Pansy. I'm not sure what, ultimately, based on what I've seen, what you'll see, that what we'll be looking at the end of the year from Jim Pansy, assuming he stays healthy. But she'll give a good account of herself. I don't know how he'll race her. That's purely up to him. But the bottom line is we're hoping she'll give a good account of herself and can't wait to get to the track to watch a race sooner rather than later. And from what I understand, the racetracks in New Jersey will be opening up to a 25% capacity as of the weekend after this. And we'll look forward to going out and watching her, as well as going out and just getting out of the house and going to one of my favorite places.
No, that'll be good. That'll be good.
Yes, we can't.
Now,
we can't wait.
We're curious. What kind of schedule do you have her on? In other words, she's in the graduate on Saturday, provided she comes out okay. What's next on her list?
I have that in front of me. barring any conflicts, and looking for the higher purse races, and we know what's waiting for her when she faces older mares. There are no races for 4-year-old trotting mares. So when she goes against 4-year-olds, she's going against the boys. And when she goes against older trotting mares, the names, you can't escape the names of Atlanta and Manchego. And right. I guess that was one of the reasons, other than coming back on 5 days rest, that Marcus chose not to enter her last weekend in the Miss Versatility. But on her schedule is obviously the final of the graduate, the Hambletonian Maturity, maybe a little bit of the Miss Versatility, because there are limited opportunities to race. The Joie de Vie at Tioga, then up to Canada for the Ombro Flight. Probably the Steel back at the Meadowlands. That I think that's Hambo Day, and then towards the end of the year, either the Miss Versatility Final at Delaware, Ohio, or possibly even the Caesars at Hoosier. The Indiana Sire Stakes for aged mares, possibly the Alleridge at Lexington, and the Breeders' Crown. And if we're still healthy and standing at the end of that, we'll be in very, very good shape, and I'm sure she'll again be giving a good account of herself.
Well, I think this is great, and we want to wish you all the best luck this Saturday. And thank you for being a guest on the show, Les. It's great,
and hopefully pleasure,
we'll have
Steve.
You. We'll have you back again when Grand Swan takes on Manchego in Atlanta, because I'm sure that'll be a super matchup, especially because your horse has a little front-end speed that she can get into a great position for a big trip against these world-class horses.
Well, let's put it this way. Brian did say after the race at Tioga, he said, give her another 2 or 3 starts, and she'll really be coming into her own. So we can't wait as we go forward this year, believe me.
Okay. Well, thank you, Les Kahn. And hopefully, you never know, it could be a nice mild upset on Saturday. We'll hope for the best.
We'd love nothing more. Thanks, guys, and stay safe.
Okay. Take care.
Bye-bye. Good luck. Good luck. Steve, that was a good, interesting interview. I think we need to schedule some plans to make it to the Breeders' Crown in Indiana.
Well, it's a good shot. I mean, if they're racing her, you know, Marcus Millander and Les and Roger, they've all come up with a great game plan for her, provided she continues to improve and stays healthy. They could have a heck of a season. I mean, it's just let me tell you one more other thing too. We missed a stake race. We had the biggest stake race of the year in harness racing, in North America at least, was held at Tioga last Sunday, and that was the $164,000 Roll with Joe Open Pace. And in anticipation, it was the first start of the year for Better's Wish, for Better's Wish, the reigning three-year-old colt champion. And he actually got beat. He finished third. Tim Tietrich driving Backstreet Shadow upset the field in 149 flat. So it's going to be a real exciting race season, I think. I also want to note that the Team Triton, Shane and Laura Triton from Australia, they got to start racing with Yonkers opening up. And just to let you know, when you're the top driver in Australia and trainer, you have the ability to come to the United States and do what, like, Dexter Dunn did as a driver. Well, they sent out 8 horses this past weekend, had 6 winners.
Oh, man, so, that's fantastic. All the international flavor that we have in the harness industry now, it's just amazing. It's going to get exciting.
Yes.
But see, we got a guest on coming on now. His name's Daryl. He's from Clark Company, and he kills mosquitoes. That's a horse's nightmare.
Daryl, welcome to the show.
Yes. How's it going, everybody? Appreciate you having me on today.
Well, tell us what
we're trying to find out. Go ahead, Steve. I know Steve's got a bunch of questions. He got mosquitoes at his pool.
I want to get tell us a little bit about the business first.
Yeah. So Clark's a private family-owned company founded in 1946. Headquarters is up in Illinois. We have 16 offices worldwide. And since 1946, I've been providing mosquito control solutions to communities. And in the nearly 75 years since the family-owned company has evolved into a global public health products and services company.
Wow. I mean, all over the world then.
Yes. Clark manufactures their own mosquito control products and distributes that globally. We work with Brazil, Mexico, Cayman Islands, all over the United States. We're everywhere and provide solutions through our product innovation and development to control mosquitoes.
Wow. But, you know, Steve, I met Daryl here at Sunshine Meadows. He came out to look at our farms. And we're so close to the Everglades here, you know, that we have a constant mosquito problem. Not only on the farm, but, you know, a lot of our owners have them, you know, at their house. Like, Steve, you probably have mosquitoes there. Daryl, what should we look for to help eradicate the mosquitoes, to prevent, you know, infestations of mosquitoes?
Yeah, and you kind of alluded to that, Scott, just there when you're mentioning being aware of your surroundings. You're familiar that you're close to the Everglades. And for anybody else out there, just being very familiar with what's around your property, what's on your property, you should be looking for standing water because, yes, the mosquito has wings and it's a flying insect, but it actually spends the majority of its life in the water, in the aquatic environment where it goes through 4 different stages of metamorphosis. It goes from the eggs to the larva to the pupa and then finally to the adult mosquito that we're looking at. So if you want to eliminate the adult mosquito that's biting us, it's eliminating that water source in and around your property as much as possible. So that's tipping out any standing water, whether it be bird baths, buckets, any container holding water. You're going to want to eliminate that water source and just protecting yourself out there as well, wearing long sleeve shirts, wearing long pants, and putting on DEET during these months when mosquito activity is high.
Now you could help Steve at his house and help us at the farm, correct? There's not any job too small or too big.
Correct. Yeah, we're residential, we're commercial, we're county, we're statewide. Anything you need, we're happy to provide a solution for. And that's just it, though. You know, every property is unique, so it's working with you and finding out what the underlying causes are and how we could come together with a solution to give you relief, give you comfortability, and provide you safety, too. You know, one thing, these mosquitoes are, in many cases, are disease-carrying. You know, there's mosquito-borne viruses out there. You got your equine encephalitis. You got your West Nile virus. And these are things that not only impact ourselves and human health, but also your livestock out there and your investment. We want to make sure that there's safety in and around the farms and around your property from mosquitoes, and we provide solutions to suppress and knock out your mosquito population.
Well, let me ask you this. What is the most potent instrument you used for getting rid of mosquitoes?
Yeah, so one of the best things you could do is use a larvicide to control those mosquitoes in the aquatic environment and killing them before they're even the bloodsuckers that we know them as. So putting out a larvicide, Clark has a whole line of OMRI certified organic larvicides out there that you could apply mm-hmm. via hand, backpack spreader. But then essentially if you do have that adult population, they're annoying, they're biting you, blood sucking. We offer a ULV service, which is a machine that puts out a fine droplet size of the products we manufacture. And we just came out with a OMRI certified organic adulticide to combat mosquitoes. And that ULV spray, when it's applied and a mosquito flies through it, it's getting knocked down right away. So it provides immediate relief for you.
So it's not a situation. I remember working on the breeding farm and having not so much a mosquito problem as a fly problem. And they used to bring in bees that would eat the larvae of the flies and really did a remarkable job. Is that also done with the mosquitoes?
That's excellent. I haven't heard that before, so I appreciate you sharing that with me. Yes, there are biological controls as well to combat mosquitoes as well. The gambusha fish. So if you have your horse trough, you know, your water containers that in many cases are probably breeding mosquitoes, you can put some gambusha fish in there and those fish help eat the mosquito larva. If you have a pond on site that is, you know, holding some water, it's not really used recreationally, it's more of a stormwater pond, you could put out some of these fish in there as well and they'll help eat some of those mosquito larvae. So gambusha is a great biological control for controlling the mosquito in the larva stage.
I'll tell you, Steve, he's right on top of it. We'll have to get him out there to Sunshine Meadows into your house. How can we get a hold of you, Daryl?
Yeah, so you could visit Clark on the website at clark.com. That's C-L-A-R-K-E. And you could go to find a rep, and you could search your zip code. Again, like we said, we're all over the globe. You can find us anywhere domestically. And then if you're local here in South Florida, feel free to reach out to me directly. My personal cell number is 954-594-0079. And love to chat with anybody who has any questions.
There you go. Daryl, I look forward to meeting you out here at the farm. We like having you on the show today. We'll get you out to Steve's place, to Sunshine Meadows, Delray Equestrian, and Palm Beach Down.
There you
Great,
go.
Great, thank you. I appreciate y'all having me on.
Okay, take care. Thank you.
Take care. Bye.
Well, Steve, there you go, Scott.
Get rid of them mosquitoes.
That's right. Got to do. I mean, I've been fortunate. I haven't been bit this season, and the last 2 years have been nearly mosquito-less. I mean, we hang outside a lot and all, and it hasn't been bad at all. But once I'm done with the show, I'm going to go out and get rid of any standing water. Because I forgot to ask how long does a mosquito breed before they get an adult that can bite you? I mean, if it's a question of 24 hours or 48 hours, I mean, that's unbelievable for a little bit of standing water, but I think that might be the case on how fast they grow.
Right.
And when it's real big season here, them mosquitoes are so big by us, you can almost ride them.
I know. Steve, only did we have the good standard bred steak race here in the past, we had the Belmont Steaks.
That's right. And I have to tell all our fans, all our listeners, that Scott Miller was spot on with his selection. I mean, we picked the winner of the race, but he had the trifecta down pat with Fletcher's horse completing his trifecta.
Right. Well, you know, Steve, with the Tiz the Law, I mean, that was an awesome race that he put in, you know, even though it was a little shorter. But they're pointing him towards the Travers on August the 8th and then into the Derby. You know, and one of the interesting things about it is we don't know how many horses are going to, you know, kind of follow that path, you know, because we have the Haskell that'll be coming up at Monmouth Park, you know, on, I believe it's July 18th.
Has the connections of Tiz the Law announced that they're going to the Travers? I mean, could the Haskell people... convince them, or no? It's set in stone. He's going to go there.
They did say they're going on to the Travers, and then yesterday, the breeding rights were sold to Tiz the Law to Ashford Stud in Lexington. That's where American Pharoah and Constitution stand at.
Right.
And, so you know that becomes a major. Issue for, you know, the training schedule, because if he could win the Travers and the Derby and the Breeders' Cup, you know, he'll retire and go straight to stud. You know, and that's a very realistic possibility, you know, that
they already know where he's going to stand, so the shares are getting sold or bought up already.
Right. And the way, things are laid
out,
you know,
price
with the Derby and the Preakness. Go ahead.
Right. Do we know what kind of stud fee we're looking at?
Or they don't have a clue yet. It all depends.
Right.
You know.
Well, winning the Belmont is good enough for winning the Belmont is strong enough as it is. And let me say, because we predicted that if it was a fast track, and it was Belmont. You know, it was a beautiful day with no fans in the stands, but Tiz the Law of just. Race just as he should have and won for fun, and I think he went in 149 in a piece, which was a couple seconds faster than he had won at the Gulfstream Park at the same distance.
Right.
Now, how long is the Travers? Is that longer than a mile and an eighth?
It's a mile and a quarter. They haven't changed that yet.
Okay,
it's
stay.
Still there.
And if it's a fast day, I don't know who can catch this horse.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. Now, you know, Dr. Post for Todd Fletcher, when he hit the head of the stretch, he stayed within relatively, you know, close to him. He wasn't going to run him down if it was a mile and a half. He'd have gotten closer, but I don't think he would have beat Tiz the Law.
He would have caught, no.
When he hooks him, you know, no telling what would happen, what Tiz the Law could do.
Right. So instead of the Belmont, which normally is the third leg and the toughest of the three Triple Crown races, although the Derby in itself going against 19 rivals as opposed to 9 rivals,
right.
You know, that makes it hard enough, especially for a closer like he is. But I hope they get a full field for the Travers and that he doesn't scare everybody off.
You know, I think they will, and you know, the interesting part about it is, is they're getting very close to having fans in the stands for some of the races.
Now, that's right.
They came up. Monmouth Park came up with a program that they could get 15,000 people into the stands, according to the plan that they had laid out. And the county and the state, you know, had approved that. So, you know, we don't know if that's going to happen. And then today we found out that Kentucky Derby will go with spectators. They're going to have spectators for the Derby. And it's going to be interesting to see. They're going to control it, you know, in groups and space them out and everything. So I think that, you know, all the tracks are now getting you know, a hand on this and what they can do and how they can do it. And it's just a matter of, you know, getting it done.
Hard to imagine the Derby, which draws 100,000 people, will only have 50,000 people this year.
Yeah, you're right. And, you know, and Saratoga, this is the thing that they were worried about at Saratoga, was the fact that there might be a lot of people come to Saratoga in August just to be there, even though they might have to watch the races on the TV at their hotel or local eating establishment, you know, that are practicing, you know, the safe distancing. That's one of the things that they were thinking about. And I think when they drew up their plan, they figured out how they could get them into the track and get them spread out, you know, so that they could, you know, watch the races. And it's a wicked list. They have protocols for going to the bathroom, eating food. You know, if you're in a certain area, you have to disinfect your hands and wait 45 seconds before you leave, you know, that type of thing. You know, but, you know, maybe that'll come back around. You know, if they're doing that in New Jersey, maybe the Meadowlands, you know, might be able to pop up with something.
Well, they're hopeful for it. There is one track right now in North America, and that's Northfield Park in Cleveland, Ohio, and they have opened up for fans. Now, again, I think they only had maybe 500 people come for the first night of it and all the social distancing and everything else that's going on. But, you know, they're the first track to reopen and allow fans in the stand, which you know, I guess is a good thing. We need to start getting out there in safe areas and practice social distancing, and then we can start going out and enjoying the races.
Yeah. Well, you know, with Churchill, they came in and they met with the Global Metro Health Department, the Kentucky Health Department, and Churchill, and they said that the venue's capacity would be reduced. You know, instead of having, like you were saying, the 60,000, you know, they might get down to like 15 or 20. And they've kind of gone through and going to do what they need to do, and I think that it might be a formula that can be placed at every track. You know, if you can do this for 60,000, certainly you can do it for 5,000. You know,
correct.
And I think that that's what's going to happen. You know, that's going to catch on, and they'll be kind of like the guinea pigs. And if it works, you know, then the other tracks will come along with it. You know, the main thing is the barn areas that everybody's worried about. Because we had so many people come from, you know, 9 different states at one time that came into Churchill. And that's a lot of people in the barn area, you know, that you're looking at. And now that it's up to 1,400 horses, you know, on that backside, that's a lot of people.
Absolutely. And people, our harness racing fans, have to understand that. In thoroughbred racing, there's so many more positions than people hired. I mean, at least twice as many as they have in, you know, that they need in harness racing. And like you said, when you have 1,400 horses, you're going to have hundreds of grooms, caretakers, veterinary people and their assistants. I mean, the whole 9 yards, and that makes a lot of exposure, like you said, from different states.
The interesting thing about it is, Steve, is a lot of our viewers, that are horse people, they understand. Now, like the standardbred, for example, a lot of those people, they're not stabled at a track. They're at a training facility. And, at the thoroughbred, it's just the opposite. Everybody stables at the track, and they don't have to, travel back and forth, like the standardbreds, might end up doing.
Understood.
So that's going to be interesting to, to see how that works out. But it looks like we're in the right direction, and I'll tell you what, I've been in the business 43 years, and Steve, let me tell you, I watched the Belmont on TV here at Sunshine Meadows, and it just wasn't the same. It was good, but all the memories I have of being there on Belmont Day.
They played Frank Sinatra's classic New York, New York, and instead of going through the crowd watching everybody singing and display of hats and people dressed either to the nines or dressed a little crazy, they ended up showing these wonderful pictures of Manhattan and the Statue of Liberty and all these other things while Frank sang, because they just couldn't show the racetrack anymore because there was nothing to see except for the horses on the track.
Right, you're exactly right. Well, one of the things about getting the horses back and running, and even though it is without fans, on Saturday, the Belmont, it was $1 million purse, guaranteed. First place took home $535,000. Second was $185,000, and it went all the way down to eighth place that got $20,000. So, that in itself, is helping stimulate, the industry, to keep people working and things of that nature. I don't know. I didn't see what the wagering through the OTBs were.
It was 40 million on the Belmont, not counting the subsidiary, but it was about 40, which is actually down because quite a bit because nobody was on track, making wagers and stuff. But just from the diehard core people. And it's just, it's a sin because these Triple Crown races are the biggest promotion for horse racing in the world. Those three races draw so many people. They draw national TV recognition. In fact, even Governor Cuomo in New York came on and did a piece before the Belmont how it was the first major national world-renowned sporting event to take place in the world, which is true.
Right.
The TV ratings were good. Oh, I can imagine. They would have to be because everybody was stuck at home, and here is a major Triple Crown race taking place, and everyone in the world's going to watch it. And now we're all going to root for Tis the Law to win the Travers, and then the Derby, and who knows, maybe we could have a coronavirus Triple Crown winner.
There you go. Well, one of the things that Churchill's really gotten into up there is they developed a way that they'll be able to actually bet at the track. They'll have windows set up and people, that can, take the money and bet at the track. And so that's going to be really interesting to see, how they do that.
Even at a limited capacity, they could easily have 40,000-50,000 people want to go to this race. But then we also have to wait a couple months and see what the state of the nation is in. Hopefully it gets better and better. It doesn't get worse, because if it gets worse, then they're going to start putting mandates back on again.
Right. Well, you're exactly right, because you can have the best laid out plans now, and it could change, and they could throw them all, under the bus.
Exactly.
That kind of thing. What you're going to do at Churchill, Steve, is you're going to ask the guests to wash their hands for 20 seconds and sanitize them frequently when they go through.
Right.
Now, Maybe we ought to get together and put our IEN emblem on some hand sanitizers and hand them out at the track.
No, what we need to do is get a mixture of that organic mosquito killer and mix that with Purell and come up with a new sanitizer that gets rid of the mosquitoes.
Well, you know, see, now the value of the mint julep is really goes up through the roof. Now, not only can you have a good refreshing drink, but something to kill the virus.
Well, enough like mint juleps, and you won't know of any virus. You won't care.
That's right. You won't care. You won't get any of the effects of it. I think, Steve, that everything's coming along real good. I was really amazed at, the harness industry, how quick, they started jumping in and, getting things done. And it looks like that it's going to be a pretty good summer for the harness industry, because they keep opening up tracks and doing, a little bit here and there as far as getting the fans in. So I'm excited about that.
Yeah, they've really done a tremendous job, and they were ready to go at a moment's notice for those tracks that were smart enough, like up at Scioto Downs. I've not checked their handle as of late, but they were doing million-dollar cards, which they need to do. People have to realize that with simulcasting, when you divvy up all the money being wagered and you return to the winning, people that have winning bets, you got to pay them off. And then once that's all calculated, the tracks are making maybe 3% or better to help pay their purses. Now, $40 million on the Belmont, that was a heck of a handle. Whether or not it covered, the $1 million race purse, but that's paid primarily, by the track and by the owners and their entry fees and stuff.
Right.
But, and well, sponsors. Like so.
Well, like the Haskell and on all the other big races, they're all $1 million pots, So, it's going to be up there, pretty good. But
right. But people have to realize that fans that go to the racetrack and make wagers.
Right.
I mean, the track has a much bigger VIG, probably 20%. That come in, so they have a chance to make money. Here they have to do millions and millions in handle to break even. But they're anticipating, a lot of positive growth, and they want to be ready when fans can come to the stands.
Right, right. Well, all of our show horses, are traveling. They're going to Sarasota and. And we had a group of them that just left Wednesday or Tuesday this week to go to North Carolina. And the protocols that they have there are working very well. The shows are almost, it's almost kind of a normal thing at the shows, they were telling me this morning, other than the fact that they had the mask and the hand sanitization and, that type of thing. And but all the shows are starting to open back up, and that's a real good sign. Because they're doing something right.
No, you're 100% correct.
Hey, what's our next big race next week?
Well, this coming weekend is the two $50,000 graduate races. There's New York Sire Stakes, Pennsylvania Sire Stakes, Ohio Sire Stakes. Literally almost every state that's got racing, harness racing, they're into their Sire Stakes program for their three-year-olds. Because that got jammed up back, from May. So they've redid the schedules. They've had to cut a couple legs out of some of them. But for the most part, they're going strong. And there's plenty of racing action, harness action throughout North America and now Europe, too. That Vincennes and most of the tracks in France and the other locations, that are waning out the virus, they're back racing now, and everyone's doing bang up numbers because people have an interest. It's just a question of when they'll be able to go out and actually watch a race.
Oh, exactly. Well, you know, like I said, the thoroughbreds are going to have limited spectators to them. But on next week's show, we're going to be talking about all the thoroughbreds, that tracks that are open. Next week, we got Del Mar, Saratoga, Keeneland, Monmouth Park, Arlington Park. You know, that type, they're opening up. And it's going to be a pretty interesting stake season here over the next 4 or 5 weeks. We got the bluegrass stakes coming up in Keeneland on the 11th of July. We have the Haskell on the 18th of July. And so that's
when's
going
the Travers,
really
I'm
shape,
sorry. That's
yeah,
first week of August.
Is August the 8th.
August. Oh. So the Travers is going against the Hamiltonian.
Oh yeah, that's right. The Hamiltonian's on August the 8th too. Boy, that's my birthday too. So wow.
It is.
Yeah. Oh man. But you see, it's all coming around now, and I hope by, you know, August or the end of July, we've got fans in the stands and, you know, kind of getting back to some normal, you know, things that we're doing there.
Well, everybody needs to wash their hands and wear their masks. That's all we can ask.
That's right.
And if everybody were to do that, the virus would go away.
You got that right. Well, Steve, I really enjoyed your guest today. I love the enthusiasm in his voice. And that's where I would like to be, you know, at Hoosier Park for, you know.
Breeders' Crown, yeah.
To see Breeders' Crown, to see that horse run. Because when you have an enthusiastic person like that that's owner and into the business, that's what the business is all about.
I warn trainers to beware when they get a horse from Les and Roger Connor, because them boys are on top of it all the time. They're talking almost every day. But you know what? They're
right.
They're good. They're what they do is it solves a lot of problems for trainers when they want to do something and have to convince the owners. When the owners are so
right.
Hands-on, like Les, they've plotted out the horse's entire schedule just as you should. Mm-hmm. I know they do that with the thoroughbreds too, and they just mm-hmm. hope. And if something happens, then fine, then they'll make a change in it. But they realize that they have a really top trotting mare. It's a sin there's not more races for her, but she's held her own. She beat the boys in her first start. Now she'll go against Chimpanzee, but I would be more worried about racing against Atlanta and Manchego. We forgot to mention
right.
that they race Friday night at the Meadowlands. It was the first time the two of them hooked up, and Manchego barely held off Atlanta to win by a nose in 150 flat, which is a sensational mile for trotting mares. And so I'm sure the tables will be turned. You know, Atlanta's going to end up beating Manchego, but it's going to be great. And then who knows if we can get Grand Swan into the mix, then it just makes for better racing and fan appeal, because that's what we need. We need
there
to be able
go.
To get behind and say, folks, look at these horses, these mares racing against each other. And you know, one wins by a nose, the next week the one wins by a head. In fact, in that race, Dexter Dunn looked over and told Yannick Gingras, you know, you got me at the wire. And Yannick actually said back to him, yep, I think I nailed you. And they come around finally, and here Manchego wins by literally a whisker. But again,
yeah.
it's sensational when you have racing like that.
You know, Steve, they got, if our listeners go to thebigm.com, I believe, right?
Yes.
For the Meadowlands, and our website, IEN, you can find a link that goes to the Meadowlands, or you can go to the Meadowlands directly and watch the races live.
Exactly.
And,
no,
I
you
think
can.
Friday
in fact,
and Saturday would be great.
Folks, you got to go to IENTV.org. And look at all the things that Scott Miller has done in improving the website. What's the movie of the week?
Steve, we got on there. It's about a young lady in the show horse business and what happens to them after they fall and get injured on a horse, how they get their way back, into the show ring.
Let me tell you, folks, every week Scott
Scott has a great movie out there. It's full-length feature film. You just click on it and watch, and it ranges from show horses to thoroughbreds to harness racing to equestrian, and I'm sure we can even get a couple rodeo shows up there. That's what I didn't talk about. Rodeo is back. I saw bull riding from out in Las Vegas with no fans in the stand, which is a sin, but, you know, the bullfighters and the cowboys were out there, and it's exciting. I mean, I've loved bull riding forever, but I know that the rodeo circuit out in the Midwest has taken a major hit, and I've had to cancel a lot of events, but glad to see some of it coming back. But another great show, Scott.
I don't think so, Steve. I appreciate all your connections we have. We'll never have a dull show.
Yeah, there you go. That's right. And we'll see what we can get lined up for next week.
Yeah. Thanks to guys at BBS. They're having a lot of major, upgrades to the station and to what they do there. So, that's looking forward to that. And looking forward to next week and the opening days of four or five of the Thoroughbred tracks.
That's right.
Thanks a lot, Steve. I appreciate it.